Button it up, Mr. Wade. You want to talk to somebody, talk to me.
I don't like talking to you, Byron.
Not when I have the gun.
No, that ain't it. I just don't find you that interesting.
Laugh it up, Doc, till he guts you like a fish.
Byron's like a song with one note. You ever read another book in your life, Byron, besides the Bible?
No need.
Byron acts pious. A few years ago, when he was under contract to Central, I seen him and a bunch of other pinks mow down 32 Apache women and children.
Renegades, gunning down railroad men and their families, picking them off the road one by one, scalping.
There was young ones running around crying and screaming, no more than 3 years old. And his boys shot them all, then pushed them into a ditch. Some of them were still crying. But I guess Byron figured that Jesus wouldn't mind. Apparently, Jesus don't like the Apache.
Keep on talking. All the way to Yuma, right up them steps, to the rope, straight to hell.
Day I die, Byron, I'm getting sprung from hell.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Reggie Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my friend, co-host, and the person most likely to have a wife that would rather be with Russell Crowe, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I am well, and I think you haven't seen a recent picture of Russell Crowe.
I just saw him in Thor: Love and Thunder. He's doing all right.
Oh, that's right. He's in... Yeah.
I mean, if he puts on the special sauce like he does in this movie, I feel like, you know... Okay, based on this movie, any lady is just... She's done. Starts saying anything, they're it's over. But yeah, how you doing? How's your week going?
What's going, you know? We're getting by.
Yeah.
Dog days of summer and whatnot. So yeah, as usual with our summer stint, really limited on the bonus reviews.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but the older I get, the more I hate summer. Like, I'm sick of the heat. I don't want it. I don't want it.
I like doing a lot of things in the summer, but as a big time introvert, it's really tiring to always be doing stuff. So
yeah. And the sun just sucks more energy out of you too.
Bittersweet, yeah.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This is the podcast where every week Perk and I review a movie connected to the previous one. If you like our show, be sure to tell your friends about it. And, you know, watch movies with us. We tell you every week that where the things are streaming, give it a watch, and then you can listen and take more out of it. So, last week we watched the movie Fury, featuring Logan Lerman, which was our connection to this week's movie 310 to Yuma, the remake, which came out in 2007. But, Perk, why don't you intro this movie for us?
Yeah, all right. 310 to Yuma is a 2007 joint directed by James Mangold, who did like X-Men, right?
Somewhere he did The Wolverine and a Logan.
Right, so like the good X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's a Western. It's based on a movie from, or it's a remake of a movie from the 50s, so it's pretty prototypical Western, starring Russell Crowe, Christian Bale, and Logan Lerman as kind of the main characters, with a sprinkling of Ben Foster. Mm-hmm. It's about this outlaw who gets captured and this rancher who tries to get him delivered to the train to the prison. Antics ensue.
There you go.
I was going to look up trivia, but I didn't. So,
I didn't either. I forgot. Yeah. I'm not sure there'd be too much on this one.
I'm looking right now. Not too much interesting.
Okay. Well, if you want to keep perusing, I can go first. My thoughts on this movie. I thought it was fine. Like, it's a Western. I think I'm not just a big Western fan. But I think this is a Russell Crowe showcase. I mean, I think he's fantastic in this movie, and his charisma is just off the charts. I think his relationship with Christian Bale is entertaining, and I think it works, them kind of slowly becoming friends and kind of how that pays off. So I think that works. Everything surrounding that is fine. I think the action is whatever until like the final scene. I think it's kind of cool, but I don't know. I mean, I understand it's a Western, so you can only do so much, but just, like, the action isn't stylized at all. The gunshots don't feel like they hit. Like, it's just not very punchy or interesting action to watch for most of it. I actually didn't like Ben Foster in this. I usually like him, but the character he was doing and, like, the voice, I just was not a fan. I thought it was kind of annoying. Bit surprised how much of a role Logan Lerman had in this movie. I thought he was going to be just the kid who was indignant and then he left him behind. But no, like, he's indignant and he comes along. So I was pretty impressed by Logan Lerman in this. And then, yeah, very weird surprise cameos by Alan Tudyk and Luke Wilson. When they both popped, I'm like, is that Alan Tudyk? Oh, he's joining the crew. And then, is that Luke Wilson? Like, what the fuck? So, yeah, weird stuff. But overall, like, it's fine. It was entertaining enough. It was too long. I mean, 2 hours is way too long for this movie. But I had a fine time.
So I'd comment and say that Alan Tudyk being one of the crew isn't all that surprising. But Luke Wilson being one of the crew, or not one of the crew, one of, like, the posse that they bump into briefly. Yeah. that's a little odd.
That was like, strange.
Was Luke walking past set one day? What happened? mm-hmm. Or is that just where he was at in his career at that point? I don't know.
I mean, he had done multiple Wes Anderson movies at that point.
Yeah, but when's the last time you've seen Luke Wilson in a movie?
I mean, he doesn't do a lot of, like, leading roles, right?
Not really, no.
He's not really that kind of actor.
Mm-mm. But yeah, I'll break off from you a little bit. I quite liked this. Okay. Yeah, because the story is very straightforward. All the plot beats are pretty obvious. Like, it's,
yep,
we're just going to pick the crew off one by one.
Yep. Classic.
But I was more in it for the characters. I think specifically Russell Crowe's character and Christian Bale's character are really well fleshed out. There's mm-hmm. a lot of time in this movie because, I mean, they're stalling a lot of it and just, like, on the road. So you get to see, they kind of pick at him a little bit more than,
that's true.
I mean, the typical Western hero is, like, very generic Western hero, you know, like, he just shows up, saves the day, and then walks off somberly into the sunrise or something, like, whereas, you know, Christian Bale's character, there's more depth there, and Russell Crowe, I agree with you, he was fantastic.
Yeah.
There's so much nuance, and he does so much, like, passive acting, like, just with facial expressions and, like, through his eyes. It's really impressive. I honestly, like, I know Russell Crowe's a good actor, but, like, I didn't really think he had something like this in him.
Yeah, no, I'm similarly never really been a Russell Crowe fan. Granted, I haven't seen Gladiator or A Beautiful Mind, his, like, two most popular movies. I've always thought he's like, yeah, he's fine. I know people like him a lot. But in this movie, I was like, okay, yeah, this dude is really good. Like, this was a really fantastic performance.
And then, yeah, Christian Bale, I thought was good. Yeah, like, inoffensive, but also, like, his performance wasn't standout-ish most of the time. Right.
I think, like, his character was more interesting than his acting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it's Christian Bale. I'm pretty sure he's a big-time, like, method-type dude, so...
Yeah.
Him kind of dissolving into a character and, you know, not really showing the flashes. I guess I can understand that. Logan Lerman was way better in this movie than he was in Fury. I entirely disagree with you. I thought Ben Foster was fantastic.
Okay, yeah, I just didn't like the voice. I don't know. Just
maybe it's
because I've seen him in Hell or High Water, but it's just like, because I think he can be very intimidating. I just, the voice he was doing, didn't do it for me.
That's fair. I can see where you're coming from for sure, but I thought he was great. Given his character's very one note, he's just like that, you know, second in command in the crew, but. I thought his performance was good. I mean, like I said, story-wise, nothing spectacular, but I liked the character development. I liked what they did with the individual characters, and especially, like, Russell Crowe's arc.
Yeah. Him and Christian Bale's arc, I think. Like, I agree with you. I think they, especially for those two characters, they set up things in the beginning, and they knock them down later, and it's very satisfying. Like, I mean, it's pretty, you know, simple stuff, like how he lost his leg, and... the relationship with his family, like it's all pretty telegraphed, but it's not like in a bad way. I think it's pretty satisfying when we get to the end and kind of get all of the conclusions, those arcs. So you know, I think that core the core of this movie, which is their relationship, really, really sells it. I'm curious to know, like, if we watched the original, how those actors played it and if they had the same kind of chemistry, you know?
Yeah, and see, when you mentioned, and, you know, I haven't seen the movie, but I assume it's, you know, two haughty tough guys acting like haughty tough guys, so...
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you mentioned the gunshots don't really hit, I think that was an artistic choice, for better or worse, that they... Yeah. They almost as like paying homage to like old westerns where, you know, they had a guy shoot a gun and there was a comical bullet sound, and then like a full second later someone falls down across the screen. Like I felt that was maybe a stylistic thing.
I agree with you,
but you can argue whether or not it needed to be there, because I'd say it's a cool tip of the cap, but I think you can just have bullets that work, you know, like that.
Yeah, I mean, if we compare this to The Harder They Fall, which we watched relatively recently on the podcast, like that movie, and that's more stylized, but when somebody gets shot, like you feel it, you know, like with this, it's the classic, old school Western. They're using like micro explosions on things to show like bullets hitting. I think it is an homage, but it's just like, it doesn't make it interesting action still. Like it's kind of neat, but I don't know. But I will say, I think the final action scene is fun because, one, I really liked Ben Foster recruiting the town to help them.
I think that was a good touch.
That was really cool.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. That's smart.
And then also I like how that backfired, where they're just shooting at both of them the entire time. And he's like, stop fucking shooting at the guy in the black hat. And he's like, then he starts taking out the townspeople. And then just them kind of running through all the houses and roofs and stuff. I thought that was really fun. And honestly,
really
I didn't really
fun chase, yeah.
I didn't expect Christian Bale to die at the end. I probably maybe should have, but I didn't really see that coming.
Neither did I, and I wasn't upset. Like you know, I mean, it's a bummer, obviously, but I think it makes sense. And you know, survived by Logan Lerman, so I think it's a good way to wrap it up. I think the turn that Russell Crowe pulls at the end, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Because you can clearly see, like, there's almost like an admiration built. I feel like these two characters are pretty clear foils.
Mm-hmm.
So they play off each other really well. And then, you know, as they grow closer over the course of the story, it's almost like Russell Crowe sees Christian Bale as, like, the man he could have been type thing.
Yeah.
Not that, you know, he's some hero or anything. He even says in his own words he's no hero, but, you know, someone with integrity and will fight when needed and stands up for his family and stuff like that. So I think it's a cool turn, and it felt in character, you know.
Yeah.
Like if it weren't that as well acted as it was, and Russell Crowe turned on his crew at the end, I don't think it would work, but with the way that Russell Crowe developed the character over the course of the story, it feels definitely in character.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And I think that's also built on by when they're in the posse finally, you know, Russell Crowe ends up killing two of them. He kills McElroy and he kills, his name's Tucker, the asshole guy. And before he kills them, you see why he kills them. Like, because they're being fucking dicks. And he's like, you know what? I'm sick of your shit. I'm killing you. And even though he's a bad guy, you understand that he has a code. Like, there's a reason for everything he does. It's not just, like, wanton violence. Like, and I like that conversation he has with McElroy before he kills them, where he's like, whatever. Benway, you can talk to me. He's like, I don't want to talk to you. You're not interesting at all. Like, you're always just one note, not an interesting person. And then McElroy talks shit about his mom. And he's like, all right, you're done. Like, I'm throwing you off a cliff. And then with the other guy, Tucker, who that actor, I feel like, plays the bad guy in everything he's in. And he's a very good looking, like, bad guy asshole.
I can't stand the sight of him. He's so good as the bad guy because he just looks so unlikable.
That shading grin he has is just the worst.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's singing and being annoying. Russell Crowe's like, all right, you're dead.
You're gonna die.
And it just shows that, like, Russell Crowe's like in control the entire time. He's just kind of having fun and very confident in how things are going to turn out. So I appreciate that. Like, because they keep trying to emphasize, like, he's a bad dude, but it's like,
until the very end when you could kind of see him crack a little bit when he starts trying to bargain. Up until that, you feel like he's holding all the cards, and then he finally gets to the point where he starts essentially begging to be let go. And, and you know, some of that's for him, but I feel like some of it's also probably so he can avoid an inevitability for Christian Bale. So
yeah. Well, I mean, at the end there, I mean, Christian Bale's pretty messed up, but he's like, he's going to the train voluntarily at that point.
Yeah.
You know, he's helping Christian Bale get him to the train.
Right.
Which is nice. So, yeah. Yeah, like I said, I think their dynamic is really well done. One thing I have to touch on, because I guess I got to do it, is I know it's a Western. I know it's a remake of the original, but goddamn, the female characters in this movie are absolute shit. Like, the scene in the bar when he, like, seduces the bartender was just weird. Like, also, like, if you came up behind her, she, like, seemed kind of uncomfortable, and I'm like, but then she's, like, all, I don't know. It just felt very weird. And then I thought Christian Bale's wife, played by Gretchen Mol, her name is Alice, she was, like, fine, and I appreciated that she, like, gave him shit for not consulting her own decisions, even though that kind of amounted to nothing. But when Russell Crowe is, like, talking to her, like, staring at each other at the dinner table, and then Christian Bale comes back and he's like, Alice. And they go back to the back room. He basically says, like, can't you keep it in your pants? It's like, come on, dude. Like, it's also just, like, written that Russell Crowe can just, like, melt any woman he wants to, which is also kind of unrealistic. This the way that women are treating this movie is not my favorite thing. But, you know, I can't have too high hopes because it is a Western.
Yeah, it's not something I was thinking about, probably because, you know, of the setting and the context. It's like, yeah, obviously you can treat women better in Westerns, but generally then it, like, the only way that I've seen that done is if the women are a focal point, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, how, unfortunately, like, how do you make the rancher's wife a better character? There's just not that much to do. You could have more scenes of her, like, taking up the mantle and running the farm, but that would kill the pacing, and, maybe the bartender could stick up for herself. That's a pretty easy one you could manage. But
yeah, or even just, like, show a little bit. I mean, you can't have too much time, but just, like, a little bit more of she's. I mean, she. I guess she was. I don't know. Like I said, when he came up behind her, I'm like, I don't like this. Like, maybe we could do a little bit more. They're both trying to fuck, you know, thing, as opposed to just him coming up behind her. It's, you know, whatever. In this genre, it's obviously not, doesn't. We don't get good female characters very often.
Right.
But it being a remake, I'm like, maybe it'll be a little bit better, and it wasn't great. But in any case. Yeah, overall, pretty solid movie. Pretty solid Western, or like standard Western, but like you said, really good character stuff.
Yeah, it's a weird one, because I remember this movie, I've, like, heard of it for a long time, like, with really high remarks. I think probably because of the cast involved and the performances. It was nominated for a couple Oscars, but nothing major. One of them was for the score, which this is another movie where I didn't notice the score at all. So,
neither did I.
Maybe it was like a good Western score, but like a Western score is a Western score. Obviously, some will take offense with that, but, you know, it's not like it stood out in any way, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, this is like big time Oscar movie and super highly acclaimed, and I watch it and it almost does a disservice to the movie, the acclaim it got, because I think it's a good movie, but if you're basing it around expecting like an Oscar conversation drama, it's not that. Like, given I didn't even know anything about this movie. I had only heard the title talked around. So I thought 310 to Yuma was maybe like catching a subway in Japan or something.
Yeah.
Up until I looked it up and I'm like, oh, it's a Western. Oh, okay. Really? I'm interested to see. And I mean, maybe even with context, maybe I would have a higher opinion of this movie had we not watched a better Western like a couple months ago.
Yeah.
In my opinion... Christ, what's the movie called?
The Harder They Fall.
Yeah, The Harder They Fall is just a superior movie.
I completely agree. It's way more fun.
In pretty much every aspect, except I would say that the acting from Russell Crowe is better than any of the acting in Harder They Fall.
I would agree with that. Yeah. No, I'm similar. I guess I've heard that. Yeah, the words 3:10 to Yuma in my life. It was never like the Christian Bale Russell Crowe movie 3:10. I guess I don't even know if I heard that people were referring to the original or this remake one. And like you, I had no idea what anything was about.
Is this like a mini Mandela effect? Like, has maybe. Everyone heard of 3:10 to Yuma, but have no idea what the movie is?
But I wonder if it's like. We all, I mean, you've heard of The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. You've heard of, you know.
That I know is a Western, though, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But I'm saying, like, old Westerns, I feel like, have a way of just kind of, like, being referenced.
Existing in the zeitgeist.
Yeah. So, like I said, I wonder if people said 3:10 to Yuma, they're referring to the original. And we just, like, didn't know. I don't know. Because I don't remember where I heard it or who was saying it.
Right.
But, I don't know. In any case, I think it was a pretty solid, you know, I'm typically kind of hesitant about remakes.
Yeah,
I think it was a pretty solid one.
See, that's my thing. You know, I'm a big proprietor of originality.
Mm-hmm.
But I generally excuse it for remakes like this, or I haven't seen it, but remakes like that Brad Pitt or not Brad Pitt, Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga movie.
Oh, Star Is Born.
Yeah, because like it's a remake, but a majority of the audience will know nothing about the original. Like,
mm-hmm.
How many people? Our age, do you think I've seen the 1957 3:10 to Yuma? None. Like, no, yeah. Probably none. Maybe Luke, but that's about it.
Yeah, the things I get more offended by are when we make an American version of a foreign film. That pisses me off. It's like, just watch. Like, I know, like, I haven't seen the original or the remake, but, like, Old Boy, I know, was, like, remade. It's like a Josh Brolin flick, and it's like, the original Old Boy is, like, iconic, like, for action.
There's another one called Let the Right One In, which is a Swedish horror film that they then remade it in English instead of just watching a subtitled version.
Yeah, and I think that's getting better. I think Americans are more willing to watch things with subtitles these days than they maybe were in the past.
I think Parasite opened a door, I hope.
Definitely. Parasite and Squid Game, I would imagine. Yeah. But Parasite was the big one. So I hope we just get more access to those. Like, I wanted to watch the original Old Boy, and you just, like, can't get it easily.
Sure.
Even, like, renting it, which is kind of a bummer. So hopefully that'll get better in the future. But do you have any recommendations based movie? We kind of already mentioned The Harder They Fall.
Harder They Fall.
Way more fun.
Hell or High Water if you're a Ben Foster fan.
Definitely.
Which I won't accept the opinion that you're not a Ben Foster fan. Like, just anyone in general, all right? If you're not a Ben Foster fan, you don't know who he is. And
you haven't seen Hell or High Water. Yeah.
Yeah, he was actually in Hustle, the Adam Sandler movie. He plays, like, the asshole owner of the 76ers. I will say, like, he's not anything special in that movie, but...
Sure. I'll recommend, too, if you want another James Mangold Western, watch Logan. Great movie. And I would consider it a Western.
Yeah, it's one of those conversations where it's like,
yeah.
Star Wars is a Western, Logan is a Western, yeah.
Nah, Star Wars is an opera. Space opera.
Yeah, I buy supposedly. That.
It's like, I thought that the bad, like the young bad guy in Logan was Ben Foster, but it's not. It's Boyd Holbrook.
Huh.
They look kind of similar. But
maybe that's an alter ego. Ben Foster kind of just disappears a lot.
Honestly.
I love a good character actor, man.
Ben Foster, do you think the term...
Ben Mandelson, you know, they're out there.
Do you think the term character actor is, like, derogatory?
Yes. But it's also, like, it's not necessarily a good moniker to have, but there are clearly, like, people you can classify that way.
Yeah.
Because it just basically means someone who's always in support and never is given a leading role.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're the best character actor ever, you should probably just get a lead role.
Yeah.
But there are people that are just, they vibe in that space of, like, mm-hmm. second tier.
Like, as we know, the world's best character actor, Margot Martindale.
Margot Martindale, of course.
Mm-hmm. She is, I mean, I know that's a meme from BoJack, but she actually is prolific. She is an incredible character actor.
All the memes in that show about Hollywood come from real Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. What, dude, because I was already a Margot Martindale before watching BoJack, and when she popped up in that role, and, like, making it, it was just pure bliss. It's absolutely fantastic. All right, well, that's a review of 3:10 to Yuma. Before we reveal what we're watching next week, it's time for our bonus reviews. I got three, Perks got one, so I'll do two, and then I'll pass it over to you.
All right.
First one, immediately after we finished recording last week, I went and watched a movie called The French Dispatch.
Good man.
Perk will be mad at me if I don't, and goddamn, I fucking love that movie.
It's it so fun.
Good.
Yes.
Here's the thing, I don't think it's Wes's best in terms of, like, story, but I think he, like, outdid himself on visuals. I think this is the most visually stunning and interesting Wes Anderson film.
I would argue this is the most Wes Anderson film. You know, like, he just keeps one-upping on, like, the amount of Wes Anderson involved.
Yeah.
With the exception of, I think, the animated features are even more sure. So, just because you can literally control everything.
Everything,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, it's just, I love how he makes movies, man. Like, what's coming to mind from The French Dispatch is the scene where, is it like all the police are staked out in a building?
Yes, like, I think so.
And, like, there's, the protagonist is, like, in a car outside, and, they just have, like, a diorama cut shot of the room, and it's just the classic where, like, every person's face has a spot. You know, like, it's like a painting. It just, the stylization of Wes Anderson movies, man, you could get me talking all day.
And I want to say, too, so I haven't seen Westworld, and I know people like Jeffrey Wright a lot. I've never seen, like, yeah, he's solid, but I think he was outstanding in The French Dispatch. I think his performance was absolutely incredible, and definitely my favorite in the movie.
Which actually says a lot, because... similar to how, you know, he controls the scene, there's a very specific way that people act in Wes Anderson movies. They're very straight up and to the point with their dialogue. Yep. And
very, like, staccato.
Like, there's a rhythm to it. There definitely is. So, and to be able to, because I agree with you. What he portrays within that, because, I mean, he's still in that staccato type, almost monotone, but there's so much emotion built into his words and his acting, I think Jeffrey Wright's really good.
Yeah, I think that's probably there's like three main stories. That's probably my favorite one is the last one with him and, like, the cook.
Sure.
Second favorite is probably the prison one.
With,
and then the third.
Javier Bardem.
It's not Javier Bardem. I do the same thing every time. I get them confused. It's the other one. I'm looking it up because I always get it wrong. Benicio del Toro.
Benicio del Toro, right.
Yeah, I know. I do. I'm the same. I get him and Javier Bardem confused all the time. Yeah, and, Benicio del Toro and Lea Seydoux.
Yeah, and they're like, there are actors that are just designed for directors.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian Brody is designed for Wes Anderson movies.
I have to ask you. I'm not trying to talk shit about Adrian Brody because I've only ever seen him in Wes Anderson movies. Like, why is he famous? Like, what is he known for? How did he become, like, a well-known actor?
Well, he won Best Actor for The Pianist,
okay,
which is a Nazi Germany story. So I've not seen it because I don't want to bum myself out so regularly, you know. So, but I know that's his big claim to fame.
Okay,
but I mean, he's been in like his top credit on IMDb is like The Predator. So he's kind of all over the place, and he fits so well. It's like,
he fits great in Wes Anderson. I just, like, I know he's a big name, but I don't really know why. Sure. So that helps clear up a little bit. But
I mean, there are people like Jason Schwartzman has no place outside of Wes Anderson movies.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he's in this one, or is he?
If he is, it's a tiny... No, he's in a tiny, tiny role, I believe.
Okay.
Like, maybe not. I don't know. He's got to be in it somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's just that all he's... on this earth to do is be in Wes Anderson movies.
Yeah. But yeah, I didn't love the second story with Timothy Chalamet and Franklin McDermott about the college. That was fine, but compared to the other two, I think,
you know, that one was a little tough to follow, actually.
I
want to go for a rewatch just so I can kind of piece together a little bit better.
Yeah. And actually, I normally watch movies with subtitles, but I didn't for this one because I just want to be able to. But listen, I want to see the whole frame, right? You know, but on a rewatch, I might watch the subtitles to be able to catch it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I want to give a shout out to I don't know if it's Leah or Leah Seydoux. Leah Seydoux, yeah. It just has an actress because I've seen her a lot lately. I see her in this. I saw her in the most recent James Bond movie, and she's also in a video game I'm playing right now. Playing hers, like it's her model, and she's acting in it. She's just great, man. I feel like she's underrated as an actress.
I agree. I am a big fan of hers, and I'm a little sweet on her, if I'm honest.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah,
and Mission Impossible, I just saw her in. Like, she's right. She's great.
Yeah, she gets around. I'm forgetting a movie she's in. I'm gonna look it up because it would bug me.
Also, Tilda Swinton completely unrecognizable in this movie. Did not realize it was her until seeing the credits because she's she's so animated in the franchise, but I normally in this year she's more like subdued.
Sure.
So that's kind of cool. But yeah, just what a fun time. And that last story with the chef and Jennifer, it was like very emotional. Like, that really got me at the end. Just kind of the payoff of it.
Agree with you. Very, like, the answer is the lobster, by the way.
Oh, of course.
Fantastic Leia Seydoux performance. But yeah, no, just I agree. The payoff on the final story is so fun. And the structure of it, the almost anthology-esque, it's beautiful and it's well put together. You know, it's like a newspaper where it's clearly well assembled. And like Owen Wilson's story was also like, it was nice. It was short.
Nice and fun. Yeah.
Just fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I like having, I'm blanking on his name, the editor in chief.
Bill Murray.
Thank you. Bill Murray, at the end of each one, he comes in and reads it and gives him a little bit of notes on it. Like, that's a nice little way to kind of end cap it.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is what a great movie. Check it out.
Yeah, it was probably, it was up there. It was one or two for my favorite from last year with The Green Knight.
Oh, yeah. I still need to watch that one, too.
It's probably not streaming because A24 is weird like that.
They got to make their own stream service or something. Or just make a deal.
Yeah, I'd pay for it. I've seen a lot of them, but I'd still pay.
Yeah. One movie I watched for the first time was Catch Me If You Can.
Never seen it.
Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hanks joint.
Yep.
Fun time. I didn't know it was based on a true story. It's like the movie's like pretty mostly accurate to an actual guy who did all this stuff. Yeah, it was fun. It's funny to watch stuff that's from a bit ago in time when a lot of the fraud he's pulling was way easier to do back then. Like, you couldn't do the same stuff today that he did in that movie, obviously.
No.
So it was just kind of that side of it was fun. I think Leo, of course, insanely talented, even at that age. Absolutely killed it. Tom Hanks was solid. Christopher Walken, solid. Amy Adams, I knew was in the movie, but was in it way more than I thought she would be. And really, really solid performance from her. I looked up later, but her and Leo are the same age. I would assume that she was younger. But so them together was really good. This isn't a massive spoiler, but I do want to say this because it was weird to watch. There's a scene where he's trying to seduce Amy Adams' character. And he's kind of fallen for her, actually, maybe. But she's like kind of freaking out about he's like asking about like her family life, and basically she's like, yeah, I got like disowned from my family because I got an abortion and they're very religious. And I'm like, oh, this is hitting a little too close to home.
Yeah.
Right now. So that was kind of a tough moment, which, yeah, anyway. But overall, super fun movie. Spielberg killed it, so yeah, would recommend checking it out. It's on Netflix right now if you want to watch it. But yeah, Perk, what did you watch this week?
I was playing catch-up. I watched The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Gotta do it.
Yeah, it's just so fun. Ralph Fiennes is so damn charming.
He's so good in that movie.
I know.
He is insane.
No, in the typical manner, like the way he delivers his dialogue is almost as if there are no spaces or commas or anything between his lines, and it's just, wow, man, he's so fun. And, like, the story is a little bit of a bummer, but all the acting is great, the suspense is good, Willem Dafoe as nameless baddie is just really funny. The scene where he offs Jeff Goldblum is just, it's hilarious.
It's funny, but it's also kind of creepy. Like he.
Oh, definitely.
He's good at. I mean, Willem Dafoe is a great actor, but he's good at like having that presence of like, okay, this dude's dangerous.
Absolutely. And
Saoirse Ronan, fantastic.
Oh yeah, we're big fans of Saoirse around here. Mm-hmm. God, there are just some weird things in there. Like it's like, yeah. Wow, that's so just such an odd touch because he. Zero, when talking mm-hmm. to the writer, describing when Agatha first met Gustav, mm-hmm. he said he gave her a box of singly wrapped white roses in a box the size of a child's coffin. Like, what? Like, it comes back around in the end, but it's like, excuse me? That's like mm-hmm. the weirdest descriptor you could possibly have come up with.
Yeah. I love that scene because Zero's like, don't flirt with her. And like he's like in the corner, yeah. like sulking the entire time.
Is he flirting with you? Yes.
Yeah. God, what a great movie. And I mean, it's fun to see like Jude Law as he's in it talking to the older version of Zero. And
yeah, I love scenes. Jude Law as well. So it's another just like classic Wes Anderson. Like that's one of my favorites.
I mean, that's got to be his most commercially successful movie, right? That's the one that kind of had the most market penetration.
I think so. Did it end up garnering nominations?
It did. It did. I was actually looking at some Oscar. What was I looking at? I think I was looking at like Interstellar didn't get a visual effects nom. And I was like, what the fuck? And so I was looking at that year. And that was the same year as Grand Budapest. Which got some other noms.
Yeah. Well, it won 4 Oscars. Look at that.
There you go. Deserves a man. Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely. Movie. That I think that is the movie to get you into Wes Anderson movies. That was for me, anyway.
I'd say so. It's, you know, it's fairly approachable. It's high-paced, you know, whereas mm-hmm. some of the Wes Anderson movies are a little slower.
Yeah.
Like the Darjeeling Limited, which we worked on me trying to remember the name of that movie last week.
Yeah.
it's a little bit more of a slow burn. Like, it's also equally good payoff, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is a great place to start, although I feel like a lot of people probably, when they were younger, watched Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is still maybe my favorite.
Dang. Out of all... Dang, that's a...
It's tough. I know. I should go through and sort them, sit down and see what I think. Because now that I've seen Bottle Rocket and Rushmore, I've seen, I believe, every Wes Anderson feature.
Okay.
I'll have to double check that.
Have you seen Life Aquatic?
Yes, I have. Okay. With Steve Zissou.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But yeah, it's always funny to think about because, you know, the theme of this show is like strings, like want to watch mm-hmm. different strings of movies with a connection. It's like, oh, we could do some director strings, like Wes Anderson. Oh no, I've seen them all.
We've seen like most of them. Yeah,
Tarantino. Oh yeah, seen all but one. Nolan,
well, that's where I come in because I haven't seen like I've only seen maybe half Wes Anderson, probably less than half, and I've seen less than half of Tarantino probably.
Or like Denis Villeneuve. Like I'm all but caught up. I think I'm one back on Denis as well.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah. We'll do something.
The last thing I watched was Thor: Love and Thunder.
Yeah. So I've been interested to hear your take.
Yeah. So we talked a few episodes ago about our friend Chris, and Chris said he does not like Thor: Ragnarok because there's too many jokes. And it's too funny. I'm like, get out of here. Ragnarok, perfectly balanced movie between serious and jokes.
Sure.
Then I go and see Thor: Love and Thunder, and I think Chris is gonna fucking hate this movie because I actually think there's too many jokes in this movie.
Oh man.
I think it's mostly confined to the first act. I think the first act of this movie is not great. I think the tone is just way off. If it was all comedy. If it was all comedy, it would have been fine. But they try to do a couple serious moments in the first act that just do not work at all with Chris Hemsworth. And I was getting nervous. But once we get to Act 2, and him and Natalie Portman get together, then I think it works for the rest of it. And it's a really fun time. This is definitely one of the most just pure entertaining Marvel movies. It is so funny and goofy. Like, it's just Taika is just unhinged. Like, it is just goofy and silly shit in this movie. The jokes are just wild, but extremely entertaining. I think this might be the best Marvel movie in terms of music and color usage. The way they use color during the action and how they kind of each person kind of has their color and just how the villain kind of has like black and white stuff. Like, it's really, really visually incredible, I think, how they use color in this movie. And the soundtrack is fucking banging. It's all AC/DC pretty much and Guns N' Roses, which is just amazing. And then, but also the score, I think, is also very good. So the music hits, colors and visuals hit, action, great choreography. Every action scene, I think, is super well choreographed, super interesting, because there's kind of three, I don't want to spoil it, but there's like three main weapons that our heroes are using, and the way they use them is just super creative and fun and just cool. So loved all that. I think the core kind of, the core romance and just kind of story works, if it starts finding out a rough foot, but I think it does work. Payoffs are good. Overall, maybe it's a bit disappointing as a movie because Ragnarok was so just like well balanced and great. A little bit of disappointment based on that, but overall, I can't complain too much because I was laughing my ass off and just having a great time. So,
fair enough.
Yeah, very, very fun movie.
Yeah, I was curious what you thought because I've heard pretty overwhelmingly negative things.
I think people were a bit disappointed by this overall.
I don't know, because people can be a little too cynical sometimes, but mm-hmm. I know Marvel humor, and if it's a lot of Marvel humor, I would not find it funny at all.
I mean, this is very much Taika humor.
Okay, I do find Taika Waititi very funny.
I think I heard on a podcast what I agree with is that people complain in Marvel movies that every time there's a serious moment, it's undercut by a joke like immediately after.
Mm-hmm.
And Taika is kind of the main offender of that, and that's still kind of true in this movie.
Sure.
Yeah. But that being said, I guess I think later in the movie, the serious moments do work, and I didn't cry at all, but I like felt, you know, the emotions.
Sure. Yeah. My one thing too, I saw on Twitter just just like Marvel managing to like work themselves into really disturbing nonsense. Mm. Like, supposedly there's like an Infinity Gauntlet ice cream stand, so basically yeah. someone decided to build an ice cream stand dedicated to a universal genocide.
it makes sense in the movie, I'll just say that. It is used for a joke.
How could that possibly make sense?
Okay, minor spoilers for Thor: Love and Thunder. But like, and you see this in the trailers too. In the trailers, you can see that New Asgard, in order to like make money, has become kind of a tourist destination.
Okay.
Like King Valkyrie has kind of needed to make money, so they have cruise ships coming in. They have like a roller coaster on like a Viking ship going around, and they open. I forgot what it's called. It's called Infinity Cones, and it's just like an ice cream shop with like the Infinity Stones. I don't think the Gauntlet's on there, but it's like Infinity Cones and her like cutting the ribbon and stuff.
Still, though,
I didn't even think about that part of it. I was like, oh, it's a funny joke, like the funny plan words.
It's one of those things where like you have a giggle, and then someone online like digs in, and they're like, hold on a second, they made an ice cream stand monument to universal genocide.
I do want to say, I want to mention too, Christian Bale is fantastic in this movie. One of the creepiest Marvel villains, just on a pure horror factor. He's up there. I wish he would have gotten just a little bit more time. People are saying he could have been Thanos level if he had been given a little bit more time. I think that's true. But he is like genuinely scary for the entire movie, and especially like the creature design, fucking horrifying, like stuff of nightmares. This kind of remind me. Do you see Shazam?
No, sir.
Okay, another fun super movie, but. Yeah. For whatever reason, that movie, they made the creatures just way scarier than they needed to be. And that was kind of like the vibe I got in this movie. I'm like, why are these creatures so horrifying? Like, I did not need this today. but it worked out. So, yeah, I think if you're going to go see it, like, going with the expectation, it is a rom-com with heavy emphasis on the com.
Okay.
Go in to laugh. Don't necessarily go in expecting, like, a bunch of plot movement for the Marvel Universe or a super, you know, Civil War or Winter Soldier type story. This is very much as Taika, just, like I said, kind of unhinged and just doing as many jokes as he can.
Cool.
So, yeah. That is our bonus truths this week, and now we reveal our watch next week. We're going to follow Alan Tudyk to I, Robot, a classic Will Smith movie, as far as I understand. Neither of us have seen it, so it should be interesting, but we'll be watching...
It's been a minute.
Yeah, and...
It hasn't been a minute. Wasn't this week one? I always feel like we always watch a movie that either you and I have seen. So I was going to say it's been a while, but I think literally this week, neither of us have seen this movie.
And yeah, I mainly want to watch the movie just for the visual effects. I'm just very curious to see how they hold up, if they hold up at all. Because at the time, they were very groundbreaking, supposedly. But
I have such low hopes. I'm very excited.
And that is streaming on HBO Max. So iRobot on HBO Max will be next week. But until next time, thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.